All right, if you would grab your Bible, your cell phone, your tablet, and let's be turning back to John chapter 18. We've been looking at the events that led up to the death and resurrection. Okay, last week, we looked at the arrest of Jesus, and I mentioned that one time when I was arrested. Well, I was made aware that not everyone has heard that embarrassing story. And so, okay, I will tell it again. It was when I was 19 years old, and I was in the Adventures and Missions program and working with a church in Australia. And my roommate and one of the young men in the youth group and I, it was one night, and we decided that we wanted to go to McDonald's. And I don't know why, don't ask me, but we decided that we were going to dress up in the goofiest outfits that we could find and then act kind of silly as we were going through the drive-thru. Teenagers. And so if my memory serves me correctly, I was in a suit coat and a ball cap. My roommate was in a button-up camouflage shirt and a big old cowboy hat. And the kid in the back seat was in a ski mask. Anyway, after getting our food and pulling out of the drive-thru lane, a whole bunch of cop cars with their lights going surrounded our vehicle, and a bunch of cops jumped out with their guns facing in our direction. I thought surely there wasn't a law against dressing up funny to go to McDonald's in Australia, but anyway, they handcuffed us, and they frisked us, and they put us on the ground, and they proceeded to search our vehicle. Now, we discovered that some robbers had just robbed a local liquor store in a vehicle exactly like ours. And I guess that they figured that maybe the robbers decided to get a bite to eat before their getaway. And I'm sure our outfits didn't help. Well, after finding Bibles and Bible tracts in our car, they realized it wasn't us and they apologized and they let us go. And so we went to our now cold hamburgers feeling a bit shaken up. But I can tell you that I have never dressed up to go to McDonald's again. Well, like us, Jesus was innocent, but with his arrest, it certainly didn't end up like ours. John chapter 18, we're able to witness some of Jesus' final hours before the crucifixion. First, at the Garden of Gethsemane, now that was last week, and then at the residence of the high priest, that's today. And we can see Jesus' attitude and actions as he was betrayed by Judas and then questioned by Annas. And we can see Peter's mistakes as he first tried to protect Jesus and defend him and then denied that he knew him. Well, last week we finished with verses 10 and 11. And we can see why Peter is often referred to as impetuous or impulsive Peter. He didn't listen. Jesus had submitted to the arrest and said, let these go their way. But instead of going, Peter decided to fight, and he cut off Malchus's ear. Now, how often do we get in trouble when we don't listen to Jesus? Well, back in John 13, we read that Peter said to him, I will lay down my life for you. And so he was probably trying to make good on that boast that he would die for the Lord. Well, after healing Malchus, which we learn from Luke, Jesus said, put the sword into the sheath. The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it? The cup, of course, it was symbolically speaking of his suffering and his crucifixion. It was God's will, and he had made his decision. So Peter should not try to thwart him from drinking it. And so Jesus' rebuke and the fact that there was no real harm done probably kept Peter from being arrested as well. As I said, there could easily have been four crosses on Calvary. And while Peter may have felt good because of this display, you know, the courage that he showed, he'd find out later that night that he wasn't as good as he thought. He wasn't so great. 1 Corinthians 10:12, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. And so the next scene is at the house of the high priest where these two dramas take place. So we have Jesus before Annas and then Caiaphas, and Peter's denial interwoven throughout the passage. What has been called the most famous act of denial in human history. All right, so let's begin by reading verses 12 through 14. So the Roman cohort and the commander, And officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. Now, it was, of course, unnecessary to bind him. I mean, that should have been obvious. He had voluntarily identified himself. He had commanded his disciples not to resist, and then he willingly accompanied them. He had actually helped these guys to arrest him. And Matthew and Mark mention that all the disciples, well, they left him and fled. And Luke specifically tells us that they brought him to the house of the high priest. Now, from what I've read, Annas was a high priest from about 6 to 15 AD. Here's the interesting thing. The law stated that a man was supposed to be high priest for life. But Annas was deposed by Valerius Gratus, who was the Roman procurator of Judea. He was later replaced, of course, by Pontius Pilate. But it seems that Annas was still considered to be the right or the proper high priest, or you know, something like high priest emeritus. And it's interesting to me to think about the Romans telling the Jews who can and cannot be their high priest. And it seems to have gone to the man who was most willing to toe the line with the current Roman governor. Well, Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, he tells us that Annas was very, very rich, and he was very corrupt. There have always been people who would abuse their position to get rich. It's just extra sad because of the position that this was. And it's believed that he was the one who was in charge of the sacrificial animals that were being sold in the court of the Gentiles. And that may be one of the reasons why Annas was after Jesus. The cleansing of the temple, you know, when Jesus ran them out of there. Greed is a very powerful motivator, but so is pride. Nobody wants to be told that what they are doing is wrong. Now, okay, Caiaphas, he was Annas' son-in-law, and he was appointed by Valerius Gratus in about 18 AD after some other men had held the office. Gratus just couldn't seem to find someone that he liked as high priest. And that may be why John said high priest that year. Around that time, it's really hard to keep him straight. That year, just speaking of the year Jesus was crucified. And as a side, just kind of interesting, the ossuary of Caiaphas, the Jewish bone box, was discovered in 1990. See, archaeologists, they're constantly finding things over there that coincide with the Bible. Now, verse 14, it's referring to what Caiaphas said back in John 11 to the council. You know nothing at all, nor do you take into account that it is expedient for you that one man should die for the people and that the whole nation should not perish. Okay, looking at the context, it seems to have been saying that Jesus would have to be killed to prevent trouble with the Romans. In other words, the end justifies the means. I mean, how many people throughout time have sacrificed integrity and morality for what they thought was logical? But John told us in chapter 11 that it was actually a prophecy. He just didn't grasp the significance of what he said. It was an unintentional prophecy. Caiaphas had no idea how profound and how right those words actually were, just in a different sense. But it's very hard to expect a fair trial from a man who has already said that putting you to death was expedient. And so I think John is simply pointing out here that Jesus was condemned even before he was tried. And so if you have ever had a predetermined bias or judgment against you, Jesus knows what that's like. All right, let's continue with verses 15 through 18, with first of Peter's denials. And Simon Peter was following Jesus, and so was another disciple. Now the disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. But Peter was standing at the door outside. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the doorkeeper and brought in Peter. The slave girl, therefore, who kept the door, said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the slaves and the officers were standing there, having made a charcoal fire, for it was cold, and they were warming themselves. And Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. Okay, another disciple is generally understood to be John, the author of this gospel, who seems to have preferred to never identify himself by name in his gospel. So after their initial fleeing, it seems that Peter and John decided to follow just to see what would happen. And the other gospels, they only mention Peter and that he was following at a distance. Maybe they weren't together since John got there first. And I suspect that Peter and John, they assumed Jesus is going to get out of this. I mean, they had seen him. They had seen him get out of quite a few scrapes before. All right, one question that is often asked is, how was John known to the high priest? And that doesn't necessarily mean that they were good buddies or something like that. It's just, he was known well enough to be admitted. And some offer that John might have been a relative of the high priest, or that his family might have supplied fish for the high priest's household. Remember, John was a fisherman. There's really no way to know for sure, and the traditions, they're varied. Okay, the servant girl at the door, she must have been familiar with John, so right, she lets him in, but probably seeing that Peter, no, he's a stranger, she refused to admit him. And we learn from verse 16 that John, he had to go back and ask the servant to let Peter in. And after John spoke to the doorkeeper, he must have gone back into the hall where Jesus was before Annas. And now maybe he's admitting here that part of Peter's downfall was his fault. See, and making sure Peter could get in. But of course, he couldn't have known. All right, here's a question that I have. Why did she ask Peter if he was a disciple of Jesus? Well, from verse 17, it sounds as if she knew John was a disciple. You are not also one. And so she was therefore suspicious of Peter. See, maybe she thought she could get in trouble for letting him in, or I don't know, maybe she thought she'd be rewarded for exposing him. All four Gospels tell us that Peter's first challenge came from this slave girl, a very unimportant person in that culture. And yet, that's all it took. Now, in the Greek, we can see that her question expected a negative answer. Okay, it expected the answer of no, which made it easier for him to give that answer. As you know, the way that a question is asked can change how we want to answer it. For example, is that your car? Why, yes, it is. As opposed to, that's not your car, is it? Well, I'm thinking of selling it. And so anyway, the point is, Satan will often make it very easy for us to sin and to compromise. Well, another question that I have is, how in the world could Peter go from wielding the sword to this? Well, his faith had been shaken. He was confused. He was disillusioned. I mean, first there was Jesus' rebuke, and then Jesus being arrested. Now, that was something he never expected. And so it seems that he was thinking a lot more at this point about self-preservation. Also, he didn't have Jesus and the other apostles with him. And maybe he had something to do with his unfamiliar surroundings and being in a very important place. Now, it could also be that his lack of sleep played a part. I don't know about you, but I make a lot of mistakes when I haven't slept and I'm tired. But whatever it was, he lost his nerve. And we all have times of strength, and we have times of weakness. And it's in those times of weakness that we need to be very careful. Now, some people try to argue that this didn't come from fear. But why would someone deny Jesus? And why do people lie? Because they fear the consequences. And so the man who had snatched out his sword was now cringing and lying denial. He said, I am not. And we learn from Mark that he added, I neither know nor understand what you are talking about. Well, look at verse 18 in the firelight. Okay, it would have been easier for people to identify him, but maybe he thought he'd look suspicious if he was hiding away from the fire on a cold night. And so being an eyewitness, John, he pointed out some of these little details like this. And I don't know if you've noticed or not, but it was by a charcoal fire that Peter denied Jesus three times. And later, it was by a charcoal fire that Jesus asked Peter three times if he loved him in chapter 21, verse 9. I looked it up. Those are the only two times in the entire New Testament where that word for charcoal fire is used. Well, verses 19 to 24, John shifted the scene to the examination of Jesus before Annas. So let's read. The high priest therefore questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. In other words, if you'd be so kind as to rat out your followers so we can deal with them later and then incriminate yourself. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. And I spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. Behold, these know what I said. When he had said this, one of the officers standing by gave Jesus a blow, saying, Is that the way you answer the high priest? Jesus answered him, If I have spoken wrongly, bear witness of the wrong, but if rightly, why do you strike me? Annas therefore sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And so John supplied here what the other Gospels did not include, the questioning of Annas before Jesus was sent to Caiaphas. And so this is the first of six trials. Okay, that's very big quotation marks. Six trials of Jesus that he would have. And I've listed them on the back of your sermon worksheet if you want to see them. All right, well, we can see from verses 19 and 22 that Annas was still given the title of high priest, even though he was no longer in possession of the office. Now, they were engaging here in what lawyers often call a fishing expedition, grasping at straws and something of a pre-trial examination. They're trying to get some kind of confession out of him or some material out of which to frame an accusation. And we learn from Luke's gospel and from a quick statement in Matthew and Mark that the proper trial before the Sanhedrin would not take place until the morning. Jesus, of course, he didn't cooperate. He simply told Annas that he taught openly, and so Annas should question those who had heard him speak. I mean, he hadn't been going around teaching a secret subversive message. You know, he wasn't involved in secret conspiracies. There's no hidden plotting and scheming. The Sanhedrin, on the other hand, would often conspire in secret, as they had done to arrest him, but not Jesus. See, he had spoken in the most public of places, in the synagogues and in the temple. The synagogues, of course, being the local places of Jewish worship. And so it should have been very easy to find witnesses. I mean, multitudes of people had heard him speaking in public. And the religious leaders themselves, on more than one occasion, had sent spies. If he had done wrong, or if he had taught seditious doctrines, it was very easy to prove. If they wanted truth, there were plenty of witnesses they could question. But of course, that's the problem, isn't it? They weren't really after truth. They'd already made up their minds regardless of the evidence. And sadly, that is the case with so many people today. So I think Jesus is simply pointing out that this questioning, it's superfluous and maybe that it was not being conducted properly. See, there needed to be witnesses before one's guilt could be established. Well, I suspect this officer who hit him saw some discomfort on Annas' face and said, well, he's going to come to the rescue, you know. And so, well, this is the first blow that we know of that Jesus received. He would receive many more before his death. And the Greek indicates that this was an open-handed hit. And you may be thinking of the Oscars. Well, he said, if I have spoken wrongly, bear witness of the wrong, but if rightly, why do you strike me? Man, Jesus was cool. Observe the calmness and the dignity of his reply. I mean, the self-control and the courage that he always displayed is so admirable. Now, see, these are things that would normally cause a person just to be all get all stirred up and thrown into a temper, but Jesus, he was dignified. He kept his composure. There was no good answer or come back to what Jesus said. And it seems that Annas, well, he didn't know what to do. And so it says, Annas therefore sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And so it looks like Anna still had a home in the official residence of the high priest. And most scholars that I read, they believe that this was nothing more than moving Jesus from one side of the residence to the other while Peter was in the courtyard. All right, so where was Caiaphas during this time that Jesus was being questioned by Annas? I don't know, maybe he hadn't been woken up yet, or more likely, he was trying to get witnesses or trying to get more of the Sanhedrin together. See, in Matthew 26 and Mark 14, we learn what happened while Jesus was before Caiaphas. All right, the council was there. But again, this is not the formal session of the court. That would take place in the morning. All right, we read that, well, they kept trying to get witnesses. They kept trying to get false witnesses to testify against him. But Jesus remained silent, and it wasn't working. Mark tells us that their testimony, it wasn't consistent, just causing them grief. And so Caiaphas finally decided to ask him point blank, just ask him straight out if he was the Christ, the Son of God. After admitting it, we read, then the high priest tore his robes, you know, trying to give it effect. He tore his robes saying, he has blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? Whew. Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think? And they answered and said, he is deserving of death. Then they spat in his face and beat him with their fists. And others slapped him and said, prophesy to us, you Christ. Who is the one who hit you? Now, in verses 25 through 27, John took us back to Peter in the courtyard. And some people put it like this. We're trying to follow Christ, but Peter, he keeps getting in front of the camera. And it could be that John intertwined these to contrast the courage of Jesus next to the lack of courage in Peter. Or maybe it was just to add dramatic effect. Either way, I like the way that he did it. So let's read. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. They said therefore to him, you are not also one of his disciples, are you? He denied it and said, I am not. One of the slaves of the high priest, being a relative of the one whose ear Peter cut off, said, did I not see you in the garden with him? Peter therefore denied it again, and immediately a cock crowed. All right, again, this question in verse 25, it anticipates the answer no. And again, Peter went ahead. He took the easy way out, and he lied. Okay, you will notice that John said they, implying more than one. I'm sorry, but I've got to address this. Okay, the NIV Bible study comments, some find a difficulty in that Matthew 26:71 says another girl asked this question, whereas Mark 14:69 says it was the same girl, and Luke 22:58 that it was a man. But with a group of servants talking around a fire, several would doubtless take up and repeat such a question, which could be the meaning of John's they. And so it's possible that the servant girl went and got some other people, you know, and then confronted him again. But some people will read this and they'll ask, why don't all the Gospels say it exactly alike? All right, now keep in mind, to add or include additional information, that doesn't mean there's a contradiction. For example, such variation is observed in the lecture notes taken by students in a classroom. All right, some are just, they take more details than others. But that doesn't mean that they're not all equally valid witnesses to what the instructor said. I mean, the same thing is true when it comes to eyewitnesses of a crime or a car accident. It's just different things stand out to them. And so these little things in the Gospels like this, it shows us that there was no collusion with them secretly getting together to make sure their stories were straight. So they all just either included or left out certain details. Now, looking at this third question in the Greek, unlike the others, it expects the answer yes. And this might have added to his fear. If he was identified as the one who resisted arrest and attacked Malchus, there might be solid grounds for his arrest now. Yeah, weren't you the guy swinging the sword around? Well, we learned from the other Gospels that Peter's Galilean accent, okay, it was also mentioned as evidence here. He kept saying y'all without realizing it. And so, well, he denied it again, and Matthew and Mark add that, quote, he began to curse and swear, I do not know this man, you are talking about, not speaking of profanities, but putting himself under a curse if he is lying, which is pretty amazing. As it's been said, one lie compels others until the liar is submerged. Three times he was guilty of lying and disloyalty. Peter was surely there when Jesus said, "Whoever shall deny me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven." And many like Peter, they weaken and they fail to declare the truth about their belief in Jesus when it's not popular. Now, there are times when people will deny something about Jesus, you know, whether that's his miracles or his deity or his sinlessness or his resurrection. But in this case, Peter denied his association with Jesus. See, I am not connected to that guy in any way. Now, here's the thing. We can believe all the theological truths about Jesus and still deny our association with him. We're never to deny that we're a disciple of Jesus. If we're ashamed of him, he said that he will be ashamed of us. Now remember how she said, "You are not also one." He wouldn't have had any temptation if he had done like John and simply entered as a friend of Jesus instead of trying to pass for a stranger. And the same is true for us. Well, it says, immediately a cock crowed. Now, the significance of this, of course, is found back in chapter 13. Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered, "Where I go, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow later." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you right now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, a cock shall not crow until you deny me three times." Now, in Mark's gospel, we learn that there were actually two crowings, and Jesus actually specified two. Now, again, there's no contradiction. Okay? It's just more information added in Mark. The others didn't think that the amount of times it crowed was important. Okay, and I found this interesting. Here's something I came across. Some scholars don't think that this cock crow was a rooster, but it was the Roman trumpet call to end the third watch of the night, sometimes called cock crow, to mark the changing of the guard. And so if so, that would mean this was 3 a.m. But now I assume it was an actual rooster. Well, after the cock crowed, Luke 22 says, "And the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had told him, 'Before a cock crows today, you will deny me three times.' And he went out and wept bitterly." It is much better to remember the word of the Lord before we sin. And I assume this look happened as they were transferring Jesus to a guard room or as they were moving him to the official trial at the council chambers. Now, I've read that there were legal restrictions forbidding trials at night and that they could not condemn a man to death at night. And so, see, this questioning before Annas and Caiaphas was, like I said, somebody a fishing expedition to figure out how to condemn him in the morning. So, all right, looking at this section of Scripture, combining last week and this week, all right, we see the mistakes of two of Jesus' followers who both turned their backs on him in some way. Now, the difference is Judas went out and hanged himself, as we learn from Matthew's gospel, and Peter repented. So let's talk about these two guys for a minute. As I said last week, the next time a friend stabs you in the back, remember Jesus knows exactly what that's like. As we can see from John 12 at Bethany, Judas was a thief, and his true love was money. Like so many throughout the history of the world, Judas sold his soul for a bit of money. Peter, on the other hand, was crushed by a simple look from Jesus. And this is something to keep in mind. Jesus may not physically turn and look at us after we sin, but he does see us. Look, we all mess up from time to time. And sometimes, and we mess up hard, like Peter. What does God want from us? 2 Corinthians 7:10. "The sorrow that is according to the will of God produces a repentance without regret, leading to salvation, but the sorrow of the world produces death. And that's going to be our memory verse for this week. See, have you ever done something so bad that you felt like crawling in a hole, never to return? Peter, well, he could have run away. Or he could have fallen into drugs and alcohol. Or like Judas, he could have gone out and hanged himself. But he didn't. Like Peter, we need to mourn for our sins and then get back up and continue on. Peter was restored. He went to become a great apostle. He went to become the one to preach the first gospel sermon there in Acts 2 to the Jews, and then the first gospel sermon to Gentiles in Acts 10. Well, I'd like to finish with this. There are some well-known animals in the Bible, right? Like Balaam's donkey and Samson's lion and Jonah's fish and Elisha's bears, but I think we need to add to that list Peter's rooster. That rooster was very important in waking him up to what he had done. And I believe that God will send roosters from time to time to wake us up. See, maybe you're here today and you need to hear a rooster from God. And you need to remember what Jesus has said and repent and get back. Get your life back in line.